Chapter 2. When Conan saw Zaporovo stalk alone into the woodland, he felt that the chance he had watched for had come. He had eaten no fruit, nor joined in the horseplay of his mates. All his faculties were occupied with watching the buccaneer chief. Accustomed to Zaporovo's moods, his men were not particularly surprised that their captain should choose to explore an unknown and probably hostile isle alone. They turned to their own amusement and did not notice Conan when he glided like a stalking panther after the chieftain. Conan did not underrate his dominance of the crew, but he had not gained the right, through battle and foray, to challenge the captain to a duel to the death. In these empty seas there had been no opportunity for him to prove himself according to freebooter law. The crew would stand solidly against him if he attacked the chieftain openly. But he knew that if he killed Zaporovo without their knowledge, the leaderless crew would not be likely to be swayed by loyalty to a dead man. In such wolf packs, only the living counted. So he followed Zaporovo with sword in hand and eagerness in his heart, until he came out onto a level summit circled with tall trees, between whose trunks he saw the green vistas of the slopes melting into the blue distance. In the midst of the glade, Zaporovo, sensing pursuit, turned, hand on hilt. The buccaneer swore.
"Dog, why do you follow me?"
"Are you mad to ask?" laughed Conan, coming swiftly toward his erstwhile chief.
His lips smiled, and in his blue eyes danced a wild gleam. Zaporovo whipped out his sword with a black curse, and steel clashed against steel as the Barakin came in recklessly and wide open, his blade singing a wheel of blue flame about his head. Zaporovo was the veteran of 1,000 fights by land and by sea. There was no man in the world more deeply and thoroughly versed than he in the lore of swordcraft, but he had never been pitted against a blade wielded by thews bred in the wild lands beyond the borders of civilization. Against his fighting craft was matched blinding speed and strength impossible to a civilized man. Conan's manner of fighting was unorthodox, but instinctive and natural as that of a timber wolf. The intricacies of the sword were as useless against his primitive fury as a human boxer's skill against the onslaughts of a panther. Fighting as he had never fought before, straining every last ounce of effort to parry the blade that flickered like lightning about his head, Zaporovo, in desperation, caught a full stroke near his hilt and felt his whole arm go numb beneath the terrific impact. That stroke was instantly followed by a thrust with such terrible drive behind it that the sharp point ripped through the chainmail and ribs like paper to transfix the heart beneath. Zaporovo's lips writhed in brief agony, but grim to the last he made no sound. He was dead before his body relaxed on the trampled grass, where blood drops glittered like spilt rubies in the sun. Conan shook the red drops from his sword, grinned with unaffected pleasure, stretched like a huge cat, and abruptly stiffened, his expression of satisfaction being replaced by a stare of bewilderment. He stood like a statue, his sword trailing in his hand. As he lifted his eyes from his vanquished foe, they had absently rested on the surrounding trees in the vistas beyond. And he had seen a fantastic thing, a thing incredible and inexplicable. Over the soft, rounded green shoulder of a distant slope had loped a tall, black, naked figure, bearing on its shoulder an equally naked white form. The apparition vanished as suddenly as it had appeared, leaving the watcher gasping in surprise. The pirate stared about him, glanced uncertainly back the way he had come, and swore. He was nonplussed, a bit upset, if the term might be applied to one of such steely nerves as his. In the midst of realistic, if exotic, surroundings, a vagrant image of fantasy and nightmare had been introduced. Conan doubted neither his eyesight nor his sanity. He had seen something alien and uncanny, he knew. The mere fact of a black figure racing across the landscape carrying a white captive was bizarre enough, but this black figure had been unnaturally tall. Shaking his head doubtfully, Conan started off in the direction in which he had seen the thing. He did not argue the wisdom of his move. With his curiosity so piqued, he had no choice but to follow its promptings. Slope after slope he traversed, each with its even sward and clustered groves. The general trend was always upward, though he ascended and descended the gentle inclines with monotonous regularity. The array of rounded shoulders and shallow declivities was bewildering and apparently endless, but at last he advanced up what he believed was the highest summit on the island, and halted at the sight of green shining walls and towers, which, until he had reached the spot on which he then stood, had merged so perfectly with the green landscape as to be invisible, even to his keen sight. He hesitated, fingered his sword, and then went forward, bitten by the worm of curiosity. He saw no one as he approached a tall archway in the curving wall. There was no door. Peering warily through, he saw what seemed to be a broad open court, grass-carpeted, surrounded by a circular wall of the green, semi-translucent substance. Various arches opened from it. Advancing on the balls of his bare feet, sword ready, he chose one of these arches at random and passed into another similar court. Over an inner wall, he saw the pinnacles of strangely shaped tower-like structures. One of these towers was built in or projected into the court in which he found himself, and a broad stair led up to it, along the side of the wall. Up this he went, wondering if it were all real or if he were not in the midst of a black lotus dream. At the head of the stair he found himself on a walled ledge or balcony, he was not sure which. He could now make out more details of the towers, but they were meaningless to him. He realized uneasily that no ordinary human beings could have built them. There was a symmetry about their architecture and system, but it was a mad symmetry, a system alien to human sanity. As for the plan of the whole town, castle, or whatever it was intended for, he could see just enough to get the impression of a great number of courts, mostly circular, each surrounded by its own wall, and connected with the others by open arches, and all apparently grouped around the cluster of fantastic towers in the center. Turning in the other direction from these towers, he got a fearful shock and crouched down suddenly behind the parapet of the balcony, glaring amazedly. The balcony or ledge was higher than the opposite wall, and he was looking over that wall into another swarded court. The inner curve of the farther wall of that court differed from the others he had seen in that instead of being smooth, it seemed to be banded with long lines or ledges, crowded with small objects, the nature of which he could not determine. However, he gave little heed to the wall at the time. His attention was centered on the band of beings that squatted about a dark green pool in the midst of the court. These creatures were black and naked, made like men, but the least of them, standing upright, would have towered head and shoulders above the tall pirate. They were rangy rather than massive, but were finely formed, with no suggestion of deformity or abnormality save as their great height was abnormal. But even at that distance, Conan sensed the basic diabolism of their features. In their midst, cringing and naked, stood a youth that Conan recognized as the youngest sailor aboard the Wastrel. He, then, had been the captive the pirate had seen borne across the grass-covered slope. Conan had heard no sounds of fighting, saw no bloodstains or wounds on the sleek ebon limbs of the giants. Evidently the lad had wandered inland away from his companions and had been snatched up by a black man lurking in ambush. Conan mentally termed the creatures black men, for lack of a better term. Instinctively he knew that these tall ebony beings were not men, as he understood the term. No sound came to him. The blacks nodded and gestured to one another, but they did not seem to speak, vocally at least. One, squatting on his haunches before the cringing boy, held a pipe-like thing in his hand. This he set to his lips and apparently blew through, though Conan heard no sound. But the Zingaran youth heard or felt and cringed. He quivered and writhed as if in agony. Irregularity became evident in the twitching of his limbs, which quickly became rhythmic. The twitching became a violent jerking, the jerking regular movements. The youth began to dance, as cobras dance by compulsion to the tune of the fakir's fife. There was naught of zest or joyful abandon in that dance. There was indeed abandon that was awful to see, but it was not joyful. It was as if the mute tone of the pipes grasped the boy's inmost soul with salacious fingers and with brutal torture wrung from it every involuntary expression of secret passion. It was a convulsion of obscenity, a spasm of lasciviousness, an exudation of secret hungers framed by compulsion, desire without pleasure, pain mated awfully to lust. It was like watching a soul stripped naked, with all its dark and unmentionable secrets laid bare. Conan glared, frozen with repulsion and shaken with nausea. Himself as cleanly elemental as a timber wolf, he was yet not ignorant of the perverse secrets of rotting civilizations. He had roamed the cities of Zamora, had known the women of Shadazar the Wicked. but he sensed here a cosmic vileness, transcending mere human degeneracy, a perverse branch on the tree of life, developed along lines outside human comprehension. It was not at the agonized contortions and posturing of the wretched boy that he was shocked, but at the cosmic obscenity of these beings which could drag to light the abysmal secrets that sleep in the unfathomed darkness of the human soul, and find pleasure in the brazen flaunting of such things as should not be hinted at, even in restless nightmares. Suddenly, the black torturer laid down the pipes and rose, towering over the writhing white figure. Brutally grasping the boy by the neck and haunch, the giant upended him and thrust him head first into the green pool. Conan saw the white glimmer of his naked body amid the green water as the black giant held his captive deep under the surface. There was a restless movement among the other blacks, and Conan ducked quickly below the balcony wall, not daring to raise his head lest he be seen. After a while, his curiosity got the better of him, and he cautiously peered out again. The blacks were filing out of an archway into another court. One of them was just placing something on a ledge of the farther wall, and Conan saw that it was the one who had tortured the boy. He was taller than the others and wore a jeweled headband. Of the Zingaran boy there was no trace. The giant followed his fellows, and presently Conan saw them emerge from the archway by which he had gained access to that castle of horror, and file away across the green slopes in the direction from which he had come. They bore no arms, yet he felt that they planned further aggression against the freebooters. But before he went to warn the unsuspecting buccaneers, he wished to investigate the fate of the boy. No sound disturbed the quiet. The pirate believed that the towers and courts were deserted, save for himself. He went swiftly down the stair, crossed the court, and passed through an arch into the court the blacks had just quitted. Now he saw the nature of the striated wall. It was banded by narrow ledges, apparently cut out of the solid stone, and ranged along these ledges or shelves were thousands of tiny figures, mostly grayish in color. These figures, not much longer than a man's hand, represented men, and so cleverly were they made that Conan recognized various racial characteristics in the different idols, features typical of Zingarans, Argosians, Ophirians, and Kushite corsairs. These last were black in color, just as their models were black in reality. Conan was aware of a vague uneasiness as he stared at the dumb, sightless figures. There was a mimicry of reality about them that was somehow disturbing. He felt of them gingerly, and could not decide of what material they were made. It felt like petrified bone, but he could not imagine petrified substance being found in the locality in such abundance as to be used so lavishly. He noticed that the images representing types with which he was familiar all were on the higher ledges. The lower ledges were occupied by figures the features of which were strange to him. They either embodied merely the artist's imagination or typified racial types long vanished and forgotten. Shaking his head impatiently, Conan turned toward the pool. The circular court offered no place of concealment. As the body of the boy was nowhere in sight, it must be lying at the bottom of the pool. Approaching the placid green disk, he stared into the shimmering surface. It was like looking through a thick green glass, unclouded yet strangely illusory. Of no great dimensions, the pool was round as a well, bordered by a rim of green jade. Looking down, he could see the rounded bottom. How far below the surface he could not decide, but the pool seemed incredibly deep. He was aware of a dizziness as he looked down, much as if he were looking into an abyss. He was puzzled by his ability to see the bottom, but it lay beneath his gaze, impossibly remote, elusive, shadowy, yet visible. At times he thought a faint luminosity was apparent, deep in the jade-colored depth, but he could not be sure. Yet he was sure that the pool was empty, except for the shimmering water. Then where, in the name of Crom, was the boy who he had seen brutally drowned in that pool? Rising, Conan fingered his sword and gazed about the court again. His gaze focused on a spot on one of the higher ledges. There he had seen the black place something. Cold sweat broke suddenly out on Conan's brown hide. Hesitantly, as if drawn by a magnet, the pirate approached the shimmering wall. Dazed by a suspicion too monstrous to voice, he glared up at the last figure on the ledge. A horrible familiarity made itself evident. Stony, immobile, dwarfish, yet unmistakable. The features of the Zingaran boy stared at him. Conan recoiled, shaken to his soul's foundations. His sword trailed away in his paralyzed hand as he glared, open-mouthed, stunned by the realization which was too abysmal and awful for the mind to grasp. Yet the fact was indisputable. The secret of the dwarvish figures was revealed, though behind that secret lay the darker and more cryptic secret of their being.